So this is the national anthem of Finland, and it starts to sound like a few other national anthems at this point, or maybe they sound like it, because the Estonian anthem does. I was reading it's the same piece of music, essentially. The Finns tried to change the anthem 5 years ago, like we did with our flag, and with the same result. They were going to start using Finlandia, written by the Finnish composer Sibelius. This one's tune, it is said, I don't know how true it is, but it is said it was borrowed from an old German drinking song. Maybe that was written by someone who doesn't like it. And the words were written by someone in Sweden. But the Finns are happy enough with it. They're happier than everyone else about everything, or are they? Finland was once again crowned the world's happiest country again recently, extending its lead this time over Denmark and Switzerland, according to United Nations affiliated research. And the BBC has run a feature recently on Finnish contentment. As to why the Finns are so happy with their lot, opinions differ. It's either because they have high levels of trust in their social welfare safety nets, people say, or they live in a country where no one gets ideas above their station much, so everyone feels pretty equal. Jack's as good as his master, as the old saying goes. We're always curious about why other countries may offer better lives, and New Zealand has slipped down the ratings a wee bit in terms of happiness, although we're pretty still pretty respectably happy in theory. We have a contrarian voice this morning on Finnish happiness. He's been writing about this. He's Professor Jukka Savolainen, a sociologist at Wayne State University in Detroit. And Jukka's a dual citizen of the US and Finland. Hello to you.
Hello, and thanks for having me on the show.
It's a great pleasure. Last week we interviewed the singer Alice Cooper. He is very fond of Detroit. His new album's called Detroit Stories, and he says the city's firmly on the way back to happiness. It's being cleaned up, big money pumped into urban redevelopment. So are you in a happy place right now?
Well, first of all, I can't believe I'm following Alice Cooper. You have no idea. He was my childhood idol. And I still think his Billion Dollar Babies is one of my favorite rock albums. So that's exciting to me. I'm afraid, though, as a sociologist, I have to slightly disagree with his assessment of Detroit. The real estate has skyrocketed and so forth. But as many things in the U.S., the development has been very unequal. And the most neighborhoods in Detroit are still very, very poor and neglected. So it really depends on where you go.
I understand, that's clear. Jukka, this Finnish lifestyle concept, correct my pronunciation if you need to, called kalsarikannat, or more colloquially, pants drunk, sitting at home in your underwear with no plans to go out for the evening and just drinking beer. Is that firmly embedded in the Finnish psyche?
Yeah, kalsarikannat, just for your listeners' benefits, that's the authentic pronunciation here. So let me give you a very complicated and academic answer. Yes, it is. I think it's very much captures something essential about, and with a tongue in cheek, about Finnish culture. And Finnish people are also very comfortable being solitary, being alone. So combine those two and you get this pants drunk type of concept. I think it's more of a male thing, though, more about Finnish masculinity. But ultimately, the reason why it resonates as a concept is because it enough of Finnish people seem to embrace that type of occasional way out or time out from stressful expectations of everyday life.
Yes, and not just the Finns, although not everybody would do it in their underwear. But we used to hear about Danish hygge or hygge. They sold candles and that sounded a little more refined as a lovely state of mind than pants drunk does.
Yeah, I guess for a Finn, sitting in front of a fireplace wearing a knit sweater would sound kind of boring, unless you're holding a stiff martini or having a beer. So all kidding aside, I think Danes, to use another musical reference, don't believe the hygge. You know, I think it's not necessarily an accurate description of quote unquote the Danish secret of happiness. Danes are quite fond of drinking. I was once a bouncer in a soccer game or a football game between Finland and Denmark, and certainly the Danish spectators were all pretty quote-unquote pants drunk
right,
in the
okay.
audience.
All right. And the Finns themselves, you write, can't bring themselves to believe, actually, that they are the happiest people on Earth.
So I live here in the U.S. My brother lives in Finland, and he's often fond of sending me all kinds of sarcastic comments about the so-called happiness in Finland. And in the article that you may have read that I wrote, I quote a Finnish cabinet minister who was introduced in an international conference as a representative of the happiest country in the world. He responded that if we are the happiest, quote, I'd like to see the other countries. And to me, honestly, this is one of the best parts of Finland, is that they don't take this stuff seriously. They call out the sort of what they would perceive as BS here, and they're brutally honest about these things. So they don't consider themselves. They are uneasy with this designation of happiest country.
It's interesting because Finland, as you say, once had a completely different image in the world, and it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah. The TV show 60 Minutes, they had a very a segment on Finland that turned out to be one of their most popular reruns. It was called Tango Finlandia, if you want to Google it. And it tried to describe the sort of essence of Finnish culture by portraying this very melancholy and humorless country that was bonded together by this love of sad tango music, a slow version of this sort of passionate Argentinian original tango music. The whole segment was a bit of tongue-in-cheek also, but I think it's pretty accurate, describing the sort of inability of men or to show affection, to utter I love you to women and so forth. So this is something that when I first arrived in the U.S. and spent some time is how my people were described.
The World Happiness Report, how does it work? How does it rank? What are the criteria?
Yeah, well, that's a very good question, because it is important to understand what the ranking is based on. In fact, there was a few weeks ago, New York Times had an op-ed piece where it was entirely misrepresented. There's a lot of information in that report, so I can't blame media for having a hard time maybe distilling the essential information. But when it comes to ranking these nations, it's based on one simple question, or fairly simple question, to imagine what would be the best possible life for them. And that is designated a number 10, a perfect 10. So if you have a situation where you think your life, your current circumstances completely correspond to your highest possible aspirations, then you would say 10. If you think they're close enough, you would say 8 or 9, and so on. If you think they're very far away from what you would hope your best possible life to be, then you would go very low. So you have countries like Afghanistan, understandably, where your people tend to give very low scores, but Finland and Denmark and Iceland and Norway, for example, and Switzerland do very well on this rank. So it's really a measure of how you see your current life circumstances or your life satisfaction compared to what you think would be your best possible outcome.
That sounds like a rough and ready sort of way to assess mm-hmm. happiness. I mean, if I'm asked how happy are you on a scale of 1 to 10, I don't find that easy to work out. I mean, so many mm-hmm. factors crowd in. I might be naturally buoyant and a bullying sort of person, but I may have a job I don't like, or there may be health problems, or the house may have been mm-hmm. burgled. So is it my happiness now, or what I think it might return to in 6 months? It's not simple to locate where you are.
Well, I think that's the idea why the question is asked that first you fix this. First, the attempt is to fix this. Imagine what you, in this case, perhaps you always wanted to be a morning news anchor in New Zealand growing up, and you wanted exactly everything that you have now achieved. If that is the case, then you would score 10, you know. But other people have different types of aspirations. So the idea is to first tailor-make the aspirational horizon, and then ask people, where are you now?
So, given what you've told us about Finland and the solitary nature of some of the people and perhaps a tendency to over-imbibe, is this World Happiness Report criterion sufficient? Is it a good marker or not?
It's Max Lubdev marketing to call it happiness ranking. There's more to the report, as I mentioned, but this ultimate ranking of nations is really based on average life satisfaction. And that's what they use in the more technical parts of the report. So it is a fine measure of average life satisfaction. On average, people are most satisfied with their lives in countries like Finland. And as I argue, I think it's part of it has to do with this sort of modest, realistic expectations of what a good life would be. But to then call it happiness may not be quite as advertised.
Okay. The Nordic countries generally, you say, and maybe New Zealand used to be more like this, they curb expectations. They don't celebrate uniqueness, for example, the way Americans do.
Yeah, that seems to be a kind of a consensus. There's a longstanding shared opinion about the sort of Nordic or Scandinavian mentality, which is captured by this. I think it's originally a poem by Danish author who was living in Norway, or vice versa. Sandemos, I think, was his name. And they're called the Laws of Jante, or Janteloven, which kind of has emerged as a type of a Ten Commandments of the Nordic mentality. And if you read those, I don't have them in front of me, but it's a pretty harsh sequence of statements, which sort of kind of curbs or belittles individual accomplishments. You are not to think that you're better than anyone else. You're not to think you're something special, and so forth. And I think the fact that people seem to agree that there's something about this mentality that characterizes Norway and Finland and Sweden and Denmark.
Professor Jukka Savolainen is with us. So the Finns get paid not that much after tax. They tend to live in small apartments, I was reading, or perhaps you wrote that. So the secret to happiness then, although you don't like the word and we understand why, is basically looking out your window and not seeing anyone who's better off than you, basically.
You could say that to a point. Happiness as measured in this way, to me, it's always been interesting how the Finnish elite, or the very successful Finnish people, folks with amazing educational credentials and successful careers, seem to be completely okay compared to many other countries living among the far less accomplished peers. They live in the same buildings, in the same apartments. They may have a little bit nicer cars, have homes that are somewhat larger, but by and large, differences are rather small. And so I think there is this unique aspect of people are okay with not needing to have so much distance, if you will, from the lesser off, and or people are happy to content with being just okay. And just because they are doing very well professionally, maybe really high up in the government or the business sector and so on, they are okay just living not so large.
And are you okay with that? That's what you subscribe to as well?
I would say so, but maybe my dad is a better example here. He's retired now, but he used to deal a lot with his government attorney who had a lot of international colleagues. And even within European context, he would note that many of his colleagues in Holland or France, and they had much higher standard of living, and they occupied similar positions in the government as he did. And he was very conscious of that, and I don't think he was bitter about it. It was more like an observation, and that if he had been in England, for example, he would have a nice country house or something. But there seems to be something about the sort of Nordic Scandinavian spirit that people are comfortable with it.
So what's great about Finland? I mean, in winter it's gorgeous, but it's very cold. In summer, I've only been there in winter, but in summer the mosquitoes come out, I'm told. It doesn't sound like paradise.
There are a lot of great things about Finland, and people, frankly, are one of them. They may not be so lovey-dovey and affectionate, but they are darn responsible, honest, decent, reliable people. It's very, think about bureaucracy, for example. It's wonderful. Things work on time, and it's low corruption and those type of things. So living in the U.S., that's certainly something I miss, is that things actually work. It's very clean and so on. So there are plenty of good things about it. I recommend highly, you have already visited Finland, but I always like to visit Finland, Norway and those countries for many of these reasons.
I loved Finland. We thought it was very beautiful. And the casual attitudes were quite Kiwi-like, really. We enjoyed being there. But then people talk about the lack of daylight and as you say, the drinking.
Yeah. No, these are lack of daylight for sure. This is something that seems to divide even the Finns. A lot of people seem to suffer from it. There are also some Americans I know, and myself, I like to visit sometimes Finland when it's dark in there. It's almost like having a blanket. It's very hygge, I would say. It's very cozy in some ways. Drinking is definitely a serious problem. It's changing, though. Young people overall globally, at least in the Western world, contrary to what we think about the youth of today, people are drinking less, and there's a generational change. But yes, still drinking too much and intoxication-related problems are serious in Finland.
Yes, I read that it has improved, though, and I was going to mention that. Can you tell us about Lagom, please?
Yeah. Yeah, Lagom, that's a Swedish term. That's another one of those sort of iconic terms about Scandinavian culture, similar to hygge. It doesn't mean the same thing, although there's just a little bit of overlap. Lagom, it translates something like just the right amount, okay? But it means much more than that. It's sort of the representing sort of worship of modesty and restraint and not overdoing it. If there's a secret to this sort of Nordic Finnish and other happiness, it's this spirit of lagom, that the best possible life that you should expect is just right amount.
Yeah.
Not too much, not too little.
Yeah, moderation. Okay. Yeah. Scientific American says, in a feature on this, says when you look at how much positive emotion people experience, it's the Latin American countries like Paraguay and Guatemala and Costa Rica, which are the happiest on earth, but they may have poorer health outcomes and more hardship and so on. So it's always going to be a trade-off, this, isn't it? And you're right, happiness is never the right word.
But I do think it's interesting that the nations that we have been talking about, Finland, Denmark, Sweden, Norway, and so forth, these Nordic countries, who seem to be the most, I don't know, admirable or most accomplished in terms of their sort of institutional effectiveness of democracy, lack of poverty, and a lot of these things that we sort of can objectively measure as being good qualities of countries, good governance and social trust and so forth. These countries are the furthest away from the countries you just described in terms of their sort of spirit, if you will, of their mentality, that the countries that do really well on these objective measures of what societies, I guess, should look like based on some criteria. And it doesn't seem like they are the ones you want to party with, you know? And so maybe there is some sort of fundamental cultural reasons that countries that have these type of characteristics, sort of lagom, melancholy Nordic characteristics, maybe it's sort of coincidence that it's these countries that also have this sort of stable, reliable, clean, progressive institutions.
And institutional effectiveness, your phrase, is really important. And you sound like you'd enjoy a party.
I do. And I guess I would say this. I am for a Finn. I've always suffered in Finland for being way too enthusiastic and extroverted, you know? So it's a bit of a joke of mine that the reason that I'm in exile here in the U.S. because my personality fits this sort of extroverted American, loud American culture. I tried to return twice to Finland. It just didn't work out. I just didn't feel at home anymore after having lived in the United States.
They banned you for being too joyful.
That could be it. I still love to visit, and I still have good friends there, though. So.
In one comparison made by the World Health Organization, the per capita prevalence of depressive disorders, unipolar depressive disorders, highest in the world in the United States, Finland, Finland number two. It's weird. It's weird that Finland can simultaneously have both high life satisfaction, if you like, and high depression, although maybe it's not as you describe things.
Yeah, I mean, of course, these are complicated, you know, healthcare, how you diagnose and that type of things. But it's hard to, you know, find uniform, reliable cross-national measures of these things. But certainly it doesn't surprise me. The depressions Finland has historically, these have changed as well, but historically Finland has scored very high in the recent decades in suicide rates as well. And Denmark, I think these fluctuate, but I used to work with a woman from Denmark, and at the time I remember the Danish women had the highest female suicide rates. The way you reconcile these data is once again is by understanding that if your expectations are low, if you expect your life to be sort of a little bit depressing, then you could still score high on this measure of that compares your expectations to where your life is right now. But like I said, it's hard to depression is a major problem in the U.S. and in Finland. It's hard to come up with good cross-national measures of how things are in different countries.
Yeah, and why? I understand. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just finally, I mean, if happiness, for want of a better word, is contingent, as most people think, on having a sense of purpose in life, being absorbed in something good, then how do the Finns fare in this respect? Are their horizons are limited by social pressures, or are most of them happy to be in small ponds, you know, helping out at the local school, putting on the local play, being a sports referee on Saturdays, and so on?
Yeah, I mean, this is the type of study, excellent question, that I would like to see. This is much more complicated than just asking that single question on which this happiness report is based on, is this sort of differences in meaningful life, right? One can only speculate. But let me make it clear, though, that just because I am skeptical about this designation of Finland as the quote-unquote happiest country, there's a lot of civic engagement. Finns like to spend a lot of time in their summer cottages, right, like skiing and enjoying the nature. And I'm sure that's a big source of happiness among Finns. But one thought that I have here is that, and this may be a little controversial, but all these countries like Finland, the Nordic countries that have this very evolved, some people might say critically, a nanny state, if you will, or the welfare state, that one downside potentially with this is that it reduces, in a way, opportunities for more sort of voluntary civic engagement and generosity that you observe, again, in the U.S. type of situation. So I would certainly never recommend dismantling the Nordic welfare state so that people could, you know, could engage in more maybe voluntary activities. But if you see the connection here, maybe a society where the public sector is responsible for so many things leaves less room perhaps for folks to engage in these type of activities, and maybe that has some effect on happiness.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. And just finally, there are people, and you do hear it from time to time, who say, what's the point of focusing on happiness in life? I know it's in the American Constitution, but, you know, there are more important things like living, you know, a purposeful, worthwhile. I mean, not everybody subscribes to the fact that you should go through life hoping that you're going to get happier.
But obviously, I mean, the way I understand happiness, it's worth focusing on. At least it's about the life we live. It's not, you know, necessarily cheering all the time or being elated all the time. I wouldn't dismiss the idea of studying and discussing the phenomenon of happiness.
A byproduct of absorption, said the writer Clive James. That's not a bad definition, is it?
I sympathize with that. Indeed, we're getting a little philosophical here, but I'm reminded maybe again as a social scientist, Karl Marx had this idea of a concept of homo faber, man the maker, that was kind of a foundation of his view of happiness, of what societies, how societies should be built, like societies should be developed such that people could find their own happiness by being makers of their own environment, if you will, and participants of their own environment. And I also like this lesser known Dutch cultural historian, Johan Huizinga, who had this similar concept of homo Ludens, a playful human. We also need to just have fun and be playful and engage with the world by playing soccer or throwing darts or what have you. And so I think these are the type of things that I would draw attention to when we speak about things like happiness.
Yeah, they're good things to draw attention to. Before we get too philosophical, I'll thank you for your time. It's been an interesting chat.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Professor Jukka Savolainen, sociologist from Detroit